Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, kind of an NBA show, not kind of an NBA show, an NBA show, talking about with John Hamm of the franchise in Oklahoma City, an analytics guy, covers the Thunder, but covers the NBA really well. We'll talk about where the Thunder go from here, where the Memphis Grizzlies go from here, and I worried over the weekend, we taped it on Friday, I worried I was going to have to open with an apology to the Los Angeles Clippers. I do not. I do not have to apologize to the Clippers. Their season ends Sunday afternoon, Game 7 loss to the Utah Jazz. Where do the Clippers go from here? We preview the Spurs-Rockets, take a look at whether the Jazz can do anything against the Warriors, and get into the taboo subject that will come up in the month of June, I suspect. What is LeBron James's legacy, and what happens if he takes this Cleveland team to back-to-back titles over the super team, the Golden State Warriors, now including Kevin Durant? What does that mean for LeBron James? I'll just go ahead and tease it. I think it makes him the best player in the history of the game, better than you-know-who. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. Right now, you can go to the Oxford Crystal. You can enter for your chance to win a trip to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. It's the center of fun in the Smokies. You can enter at crystal.com. You can also enter at the Oxford Crystal, just next door to the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. The Mix 5 for 5, you can now featuring the Country Fried Steak Crystal, the Country Fried Chicken Crystal. Still always get the bigger breakfast combo. Fresh cracked eggs, French toast sticks, grits, everything. Frozen and fabulous slushies, the Kool-Aid slushies, the caramel mocha frost. All of that there at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're brought to you by the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number, tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's really that simple. And then take the quote, shop it around if you'd like, or let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for businesses all over, businesses and individuals all over the South, from Cape Girardeau to Biloxi and all points in between, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. That's at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900 or clarkfordinc.com. The podcast also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM's a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups, with a simple logic. They find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that eventually does business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM mastered the craft in the political advertising world. They have decades of advertising experience and a unique perspective to advertising and a tireless work ethic rooted in their days of nonstop campaigns. To email them, send the email to Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. The Beer Garden is also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company, Snooze 2202, Jackson Avenue West in Oxford. It is the place to go for all of your bedding needs. They've got all the mattresses you know and love, Jameson, Serta, Tempur-Pedic. It's all there. All the accessories you could want, linens, bed frames, pillows, everything you might need in bedding. They've got it at Snooze. Great delivery and setup. They'll take great care of you. get in touch with Jacob Williams and the people at Snooze. It's gosnooze.com. We're also brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. Community Mortgage, 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands the market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Get in touch with Jason Lowe. He's the branch manager in Oxford at 662-234-2704 or jlowe@communitymtg.com. And last but not least, we're brought to you by LB's Meat Market. LB's in Oxford on University Avenue, right across from Kroger. Tell you about it all the time. It is the place to get fresh cuts in Oxford. 2008 University, 662-259-2999. Get in touch with the guys there and let them hook you up. They have lunch every day. Greg Jones and the team there, they do a great job. The lunch is fantastic. Catering menu as well. The fresh cuts that we tell you about all the time. You got to try the bone-in ribeye. They've got the pork from Como Farms. Fresh chicken. They have some seasoned, some that's not. Whatever you want it, they can handle it there at LB's. And then you got to try the sausages, the fresh and smoked sausage. Grab a few, sample it. It's a great appetizer, a great meal in and of itself. All of that at LB's. And when you go into LB's, right there on the left, they have a beer fridge. Grab six that you like, six of the same, three sets of two, whatever you want to do. Get a six-pack of craft beer. Tell Greg you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and you get it for $6. Can't beat that anywhere in Oxford. That's LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue, 662-259-2999. Now let's talk some NBA with John Hamm of the franchise in Oklahoma City. All right, John, thanks for being back. I've looked forward to this conversation for a little while, so appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, you bet, man. Glad to be back.
Let's start with where the whole entire NBA season seemed to start and finish anyway, and that's Russell Westbrook. He's going to win the MVP award. I think in the series against Houston, he showed that he probably deserves to win the MVP award. Yet at the same time, you watch that series, at least I did. You know the NBA better than I do. I watched the NBA series, that series between the Rockets and the Thunder, and I wondered how many times Sam Presti looked down on the floor and said, that's kind of what we have to do if we're going to take the next step. We almost have to follow the Rockets' blueprint, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, you know, Sam has talked about this before, and I forget the exact verbiage that he used, but like trying to copy everyone else is the quickest way to the middle. And I think what he meant by that is, you know, if one team is investing heavily in three-point shooting and doing like what Golden State and Houston is doing, if you have the personnel to do that, that's great. Otherwise, you're going to have to find counters to that. And they came close. I mean, look, a team that relied on traditional big men pushed the Warriors to seven games last season. They had a 3-1 lead on them.
Yeah.
And the kind of the feeling was like if Oklahoma City would have beaten that team, that could have caused a shift in the NBA. You know, not just in Oklahoma City but elsewhere, to start kind of emulating maybe what Oklahoma City is doing. So, like I say, it's kind of strange. San Antonio is a team that invests heavily in the mid-range game, because it's a market deficiency. They can buy into it. Oklahoma City has done a lot of the same of that. I think the real issue is that Thunder team was built for Durant and Westbrook, and they intended for the team to have, you know, Steven Adams, Victor Oladipo off the bench, Andre Robertson, Al Horford at the four. When that didn't come together, they had basically Russell Westbrook and a lot of specialists. And so I don't know if they need to necessarily, you know, go to the photocopier and copy what Houston did, but I think that they could borrow some elements from that.
I'm curious. We'll never know the answer, so it's just a hypothetical and an opinion. Let's say it had all worked out in the summer, last June, last July. Durant stays. would have been more focused on Westbrook's free agency, I suppose. But Horford comes. I guess Cantor would not have been on that team probably. They would have moved him.
Correct.
What do you think that team would have done, assuming it stayed, relatively healthy?
Yeah. That team would have probably, in my opinion, would have been probably the favorite coming into the season. Golden State, obviously, even with three all-stars, even with three guys that are, top 15 players, would have been, phenomenal. But, it would have been Golden State, Oklahoma City fighting throughout the season. San Antonio being the Spurs like they always are. This upstart Rockets team, I think, nothing would have really prevented them from making the emergence they did this season. But I think a lot of people would have had Oklahoma City as the favorite based on year two of Billy Donovan. Some of these changes they planned on making. And, there was like this such buildup for so many years, like they're about to break through. They are about to do it. And right when they were getting ready to, it came apart. So that's how I feel like it could have potentially unfolded.
Do you think it bothers Kevin Durant at all that he has not been, this is the wrong word, but he has not been needed in Golden State? I mean, he went down with the knee injury and they just kind of carried on. If anything, they might have played a little better in his absence once they kind of got back into their groove. He wasn't a big factor in the Portland series until the last game. In your opinion, does that, you know him a little bit, does that bother him, or would he tell you, no, that's one of the reasons I went there?
He might say that's one of the reasons why he went there. I don't know. Kevin Durant, obviously, a lot of people around here after 8 or 9 years thought they had a pretty good idea on how he ticked. And, in the end, it turned out that, I don't know if people were necessarily wrong or Kevin just kind of did an abrupt face, kind of an about face. To me, if you are a competitive superstar, and we're talking about the guys like LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, all of those guys, and if you are the best player on your team and your team doesn't need you, I don't see how that sets well. I don't see how Kevin Durant could be like, wow, this is great. I'm the best player, and they don't need me. Like, he should. It seems to me like you would want to be, the face of that team, the star of that team, even if there's all these other talented guys and they keep talking up about, oh, we need Kevin to be, to be that guy. But yeah, they don't need him.
But they don't need him.
They don't.
I mean, the numbers, the metrics, the eye test, everything tells you that. I mean, look, Curry, and I think Klay Thompson might be the most underrated player in the game. I mean, I know he gets a lot of props, but I don't know that he gets the credit that he deserves for just being he's a killer out there. As much as I don't care for Draymond Green and some of the antics sometimes, he is a phenomenal defensive player. He's a facilitator. They've got depth on their bench. Iguodala he's not the player that he was a couple of years ago, but he's still a very good basketball player. Livingston's good. I mean, they've not needed Durant, and maybe he's the difference in winning a title and not winning a title. I don't know, but hell, they damn near won a title last year. They won a title 2 years ago. I think more than anything, Golden State needed Durant not to be on the Thunder.
No, that's the whole thing. I think Golden State would have been ecstatic if Kevin Durant would have went anywhere except for Oklahoma City or probably San Antonio. They would have been ecstatic if he would have went to Boston, because that would have got him out of the conference and would have gutted their primary competitor. So I feel like, that was a huge part of the strategy right there. And someone sent me the quote, I guess from July 4th, that the Bob Myers, the Golden State GM, apparently his pitch was, we can win titles here without you. You might be able to win one or two, without us, but together we're going to win a whole bunch of them. I'm paraphrasing. That's basically, I think, what the quote was. And, I have no doubt that, probably it's like, we'd like to get that guy because we think we can make it all work. And then number two, there goes our competition. So, smart.
I want to talk about three Western Conference teams that their seasons are finished. And I'm putting the Clippers in that. We're taping this on Friday afternoon. I think by the time this runs later this weekend, the Clippers will be done. If I'm wrong, congratulations to Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan and everyone there in Los Angeles. But it doesn't look good. I'll start with the Thunder. I guess it obviously begins and ends with what ultimately happens in July with Russell Westbrook. He'll be offered a massive extension. Is the anticipation there in Oklahoma City that he will take it?
There's optimism. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I think a lot of fans are still kind of in shock over Durant's departure. And so even if Russell Westbrook, you know, gets up and talks glowingly about Oklahoma City and saying, this is where I want to be, I think everyone's kind of going, yeah, but we've heard this before.
Sure.
You know, there are some encouraging signs, and not even Russell Westbrook in an exit interview or, you know, things like that. There are some things that I've seen and heard that have given me at least a positive indication that he plans on staying here.
Okay, let's assume for the sake of this discussion that he does, because obviously if he were to tell the Thunder this summer, I don't know, Sam Presti would be put in a remarkably difficult spot because you can't afford to let him walk for nothing. You just can't do it. So he'd have a decision to make. But let's assume for the sake of this discussion that he re-ups, takes the huge deal, the same deal that basically Harden will take in Houston. Is there enough financial flexibility to add around him, or is the group that went through this season simply going to have to get better?
Yeah, internal development is going to be one of the biggest ways this team is going to improve. And it's something that I've talked about a lot throughout the season. This was either the second or third youngest team in the NBA, and that included having, you know, 35, 36-year-old Nick Collison on the team, and at one point, you know, an older Anthony Morrow who wasn't playing much. A very young team that does have guys like Sabonis, Abrines, Adams and Oladipo as well, more room to develop, and you know, they haven't even hit their ceilings yet, or at least hopefully they have not. So that's the primary way this team is going to improve. There's really not a realistic way for them to create salary cap room. They would have to gut, practically the entire team to get like a close to maximum salary slot created. So that's just not, it's just not viable. Trades are going to be the other thing, and that's the other area where Sam Presti is, when you look at the three prongs of building a team, draft, trade, free agency, he is always focused on the draft and trades. And free agency has never been, you know, something the Thunder have had to rely on. So internal development and trades, that's how the team's going to improve.
They have to move Enes Kanter if there's a willing partner, right?
I go back and forth on this. A lot of people are looking at that Houston series. I mean, that series was just a bad matchup for him.
It was. And it gives you recency bias when you look at it. You say, well, you know,
yes,
he was so bad in that series. Yet in the second half of the season, I thought at times he was emerging as truly a six-man candidate. But you watch him against Houston, and I know people caught Billy saying can't play Kanter, but he's right. You can't play Kanter. Yeah. He could not be on the floor in that series.
Yeah. So Enes, you know, just to refresh people, like, you know, he missed 10 games during the season after that. You know, he's even admitted it was stupid when he went to go punch a chair and he wound up breaking his forearm. And the team struggled. I mean, they really struggled that second unit without him during that stretch. He struggled against Houston. He's going to struggle against Golden State. But yeah, if this team had played Utah, or if it had played the Clippers or San Antonio, Kanter would have been a big part of that series. So I wouldn't necessarily, you know, assume he's the first out of town. He does have the salary that if you're going to make some kind of an impactful change to this team, maybe he's involved. But I wouldn't assume automatically that he's not going to be back on the team next season.
Similar question about Victor Oladipo. Had a pretty up and down year. It was his first year. It was adjusting to a new place, adjusting to a new role, adjusting to playing with Russell Westbrook. Not very impactful in that Houston series at times when the Thunder really needed him to be. He's got a contract that you could move. There's some names out there. Roberson could play the two. You know, there's a couple of big-time threes that are potentially available in trades, referring to guys like Paul George, Jimmy Butler? Is there any chance of something like that happening, or do you think Oladipo's in Oklahoma City for a while?
I think, you know, for the right player, I mean, yeah, if Paul George became available and there was some way to work a deal with Oklahoma City, I have no doubt they would probably include Oladipo in that deal. Otherwise, I mean, kind of what I think the team would like to do is probably move Robertson back to shooting guard, find some kind of a shot-making, playmaking small forward, and bring Oladipo off the bench. I mean, that was the original idea when they acquired him, is that he was going to come off the bench, you know, on this team with Russ and KD, and, you know, be that sixth man, be that, you know, James Harden, Reggie Jackson type guy. They could slide him back to that role. I think this season, like you say, it was his role changed. He became a really good three-point shooter. I mean, he improved a lot in that area, but yeah, at the cost of a lot of his aggressiveness. So, you know, I still think there's some things that he can kind of figure out and make some strides and become even better.
Last couple of things on the Thunder before we move to Memphis. Is there a name or two that comes to mind at that three spot where you could move Oladipo to the bench? And then I guess somewhat along those lines, Taj Gibson, what's his future there?
Yeah, as far as guys to fill that spot, I mean, there's the usual suspects. They're names that came up around the trade deadline, and, you know, people were talking about guys like Danilo Gallinari, Wilson Chandler, both of those guys from Denver. Another name that, you know, that some of my friends and I have kind of kicked around is Nicholas Batum from Charlotte.
Yeah,
I think that's another guy that could fit in really well. You know, maybe I don't know how realistic this is, but I could kind of see, you know, how it could come together. But Andrew Wiggins in Minnesota, if they have any hesitation on do we want to make a big time investment on this guy going forward or do we move him now, you know, maybe he could come into play. I you know, even if the Thunder don't wind up with him, I wonder if Minnesota is going to shop him this summer. So, you know, those are a few guys that come to mind, you know, potentially for that spot. And as for Taj, you know, even when they got him, I thought maybe he was going to be a short-term rental. It still feels that way. I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I also think the team has kind of changed a little bit as the season progressed now, and it looks like, you know, your power forwards of the future are Sabonis and Jeremy Grant. I don't think I think they're kind of giving up on the idea of Jeremy Grant being like a small forward that can defend some two guards. I think they see his value, you know, in those power positions now. So that might decrease the chances of Taj coming back.
I thought Grant's game developed leaps and bounds second half of the season.
It really did. You know, he came over from Philadelphia, and I remember being in the arena, and I forget if I told you this on the last one, but, you know, shortly after they acquired him, maybe it was on their first, you know, homestand after bringing him back, but, you know, I'm in the arena 2 hours before, and coaches are working with him on corner three-pointers. And he became very good at that. Shot blocking was something he was really good at in Philadelphia, and that was an aspect that this team, you know, badly needed after trading Serge Ibaka. So yeah, I mean, there was some work to do, but I think there's still some work to do there. But I think Jeremy Grant, you know, is potentially a very big piece moving forward for this team.
Yeah, I'd like to have his hops just one day, just to see what that.
Oh,
was
man,
like. Just to experience. All I would do the entire 24 hours is I would just go dunk. I would just go dunk.
That's
just
it.
Dunk. Just dunk for 24 hours, and then when my powers went away, I'd go take a nap. He's so springy. Let's talk about the Grizzlies. They got eliminated Thursday night. They gave the Spurs all the Spurs wanted. But in the end, Kawhi Leonard was simply too much. They're an older group. A lot of money invested in Gasol. A lot of money invested in Mike Conley. Randolph's not getting any younger. Vince Carter is fighting Father Time and giving him one hell of a battle. But you know how that you know how that's going to end. Was that their last hurrah, or was that enough to give them one more run?
You know, yeah, Memphis is in. They've got some issues coming up. So as you mentioned, they're one of the oldest teams in the league. Their average age, I think, was like the third oldest in the NBA last season. Not only do they have a ton of money tied up in Gasol and Conley, which is fine, but that Chandler Parsons contract.
Yeah.
I know like it's fun to like poke fun at the guy or what have you. You know, the realistic thing is I'm not even sure why Memphis took that risk given his medical history, and that could come back to bite them. And then you factor in the fact, you know, Zach Randolph, how much longer does he have? Tony Allen, could he be, you know, could the father, the godfather of grit and grind be moved out this summer? Vince Carter, like you mentioned. And then there's not a lot in the pipeline to come up and fill those spots. You know, they've tried James Ennis. They've got a couple of backup point guards on the roster. They've got, you know, Deontay Davis, who was a former second round pick. The grit and grind era, it's felt like it was nearing its conclusion, and maybe it should at this point, and they should, you know, again, not necessarily mimic what everyone else is doing, but get a little more modern. And I think they're probably going to be forced to, because they got a lot of decisions to make.
What could they do? I mean, if you just decided to break it up and you shopped Gasol, what's a realistic expectation for a return?
Yeah, I mean, Gasol at this point, I mean, I think he's proven himself healthy after that foot fracture. There was no lingering issues there. He added the three-point shot to his game. His defense, I don't think, is quite, you know, where it was. Obviously, he's a one-time defensive player of the year. Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that you could probably haul in something fairly significant on the trade market. But, you know, two, there's a lot of value in keeping him with the Grizzlies franchise. I mean, this is what, you know, some of these teams do. It's like, this guy's not going anywhere. His career started here. He's going to retire from here. But if they did put him on the market, look, I mean, the big man game is not dead in the NBA. And a guy like him, there's a lot of teams that would climb all over themselves to get a hold of him.
Like I said, maybe I'll end up owing apologies to the Clippers. If I do, I'll let you be completely absolved from blame. For the sake of this conversation, though, at this very moment as we record this, I feel safe in saying it's over. What are they? I mean, this is that group that they built with Doc built this group with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan and J.J. Redick and the sixth man is his name is
Crawford.
Thank you. And God, on paper they look fantastic. And sometimes on the court, they look fantastic, but it has not worked. They've either run into the Grizzlies, or they've run into the Thunder, or they've run into the Rockets, and now they're running into the Jazz. And what happened, assuming that sometime this weekend it ends, maybe as early as tonight, do they tear it apart?
Yeah, the other thing they've run into is injuries.
Yeah.
And, you know, very ill-timed injuries. They are... This is a fascinating thing for me to see what they do this summer, because it, you know, indications are that Chris Paul has already got his contract wrapped up. You know, he's probably going to take a few meetings, but ultimately he's going to stay in Los Angeles. There's some speculation on whether Doc Rivers is going to stay or if he's going to look to pick up and go somewhere else. And then as far as the rest of the team goes, yeah, Blake Griffin is almost certainly going to opt out of his contract. J.J. Redick's a free agent. And here's the thing. If one of those guys or both of those guys depart, they don't have a tool to really replace those guys. I mean, they're not going to manufacture cap room to go out and do anything. On the other end, they triggered the repeater tax. And this is basically, you know, for the foreseeable future, their tax rates are going to be even higher than usual, because they were taxpayers in at least 4 out of 5 seasons, and that's going to remain true until they dip under the tax line for a couple of seasons. It's going to be very expensive to keep that thing together, and you've got to look at it, you know, even with the injuries, is it worth, you know, having a, let's say, $200 million payroll for a team that has trouble getting past the second round?
No.
It doesn't seem like a wise investment, and the joke that I've made is that, you know, Steve Ballmer knows all about making a very expensive, mediocre product. Okay?
Yes, yeah. No, you're right, maybe, but you're right.
Maybe he does.
So, I like Blake Griffin. I think his game's better than people give him credit for. He's expanded his game. He's done a lot of things, but he is, it's unfortunate. Maybe fragile's not the right word. is there a team out there that's going to give him a max deal?
You know, I still think so. I mean, I look at Miami, you know, and that's a team that, you know, Pat Riley is always aggressive. And, you know, I imagine a team like Miami probably would. I imagine Brooklyn probably would. I mean, you know, there are some teams that are just desperate, even though, you know, Blake hasn't made, he didn't make the All-Star team last year. I don't remember about the year before. And obviously there's some issues there. I think there are some teams that would definitely take a chance on him. So, and that's the quandary for the Clippers is, like I said, you can't really afford to let that guy get away, because then how do you replace him? You don't really have the ability to. So, you know, whether they just go ahead and just, you know, bring the guys back and then try to sort them out through trade later, work some sign in trades. There's a number of different ways they can go there, but it does feel like that, you know, that three-man group has gone about as far as it can go.
Has to be frustrating for Chris Paul, one of the greatest point guards to play the game, and he just can't get close to a ring, can't get to a conference finals, can't get to a finals. That it has to eat him up.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned the injuries. I mean, obviously last season, this season, unfortunate. But there was, you know, 2 years in a row, there was the 2014 playoffs against the Thunder when, you know, some of Chris Paul's gaffes late in that series cost him that series. The next year, they had a 3-1 lead on the Rockets, and they were up by 19 points with 14 minutes left. And then that, you know, they wound up blowing that series lead. So some of it is self-inflicted. Some of it is outside of his control. And some people hold that against him, which is, you know, in some degrees, okay, I kind of get it. But in other ways, again, it's really hard to blame him. But you're right. I mean, one of the greatest point guards, when we sit down at the end of his career and figuring out, you know, how great he was, he's going to be one of the greatest that's played that position.
Let's just take a quick look at some of the conference semifinals that are about to get started. I think Monday night it's game one in San Antonio, Houston and the Spurs. Is there a scenario in your mind where Houston wins that, or is that a series where the Spurs can put Leonard on Harden enough to slow him down and then sort of Popovich it from there?
Yeah, I'm willing to hedge towards the Spurs here on this one. I felt like, you know, the Rockets, they kind of came out of nowhere. They've had a great deal of success this season. But some of this is kind of the D'Antoni effect. And if you go back and look throughout his career, there's been a number of players and point guards that have really benefited from him. And I mean, I just kind of feel like that San Antonio and Popovich would be able to scheme something up and, you know, put something enough together to get through this series. But, you know, I say that on one hand, and then I keep thinking back to the, you know, the times that San Antonio has been out-athleted in a playoff series, and, you know, Houston could do that to them.
Yeah, the Thunder did it to them several times.
Yeah, they did. So, I don't know. I still have a lot of – I have faith not just in Popovich, but in Kawhi Leonard, who is just seemingly taking his game to another level here in the postseason. So, you know, as much as we talk about how can the Rockets slow down Harden, I mean, they're I don't know that they've got anybody – they can effectively check Kawhi in this series.
I thought it was fascinating in game six of that Grizzlies-Spurs series. Late in the game, you know, we always, because we in the media can, as you know, can get kind of lazy. And we can really get lazy with narratives. And There's this narrative with Popovich teams and the Spurs that, oh, it's the beauty of their ball movement and all of that. And it often is. But late in that game, it was get it to Kawhi. And literally, John, he was dribbling around in and out of the paint, waiting to find a crease, and then bam, make a play. And I thought, there's not a whole lot of coaching there. That's just give the ball to the best player and say, go for it.
Pretty much. Yeah. And a lot, I mean, that's not unusual. I mean, you can, you know, that that style of play that you mentioned, you know, a lot of these teams will run that for the first 45 minutes or so until it gets down to those situations. And then, sure, I mean, this is where star players make the difference in the NBA.
Can Utah take Golden State to six, or is that a five-game series?
That feels like a five-game series. It really does. I mean, they're going to have an advantage, obviously, in having Gobert. And then if they can play Gobert and Favors together, I don't know. maybe they can, but it's going to be probably Gobert and Diao for the most part in the front court. And then Golden State's got an advantage everywhere else. So I would love to see the Jazz, you know, do something like that, or even, you know, potentially upset Golden State. But at this point, there's really no reason to think it'd go more than five.
I do think for that team, assuming Hayward stays and they can keep that group together, I do think the experience of winning a series and then going against the Warriors is only going to really strengthen them going forward, getting some of that playoff experience. They're dangerous moving forward if they can keep that group together.
Yeah, if they can, because it's not just Hayward, but it's George Hill is also a free agent, and he was a, you know, he is a big part of the team. And so, you know, keeping both of those guys is going to be it's going to be a huge thing. Now, I mean, Utah does have some guys in the pipeline, obviously not at the level of like a George Hill if he decided to leave. But if Hayward leaves, that's a pretty stunning blow to the franchise. So that's another thing to watch this summer. You look at the Clippers and Utah above Oklahoma City. If something happens to one or both of those teams, that's going to open up a whole lot of daylight for teams below them.
Toronto gets another crack at Cleveland. They survived the Bucks, and that's about all they did. I listened to a lot of that game. I was driving back from Memphis last night from a soccer game, and I listened to a lot of Toronto and Cleveland, and Toronto tried to give away Game 6 to the Bucks. There's no chance that they even they just don't have a chance against LeBron, right?
I don't think so. I mean, Cleveland's, you know, I think Cleveland's defense is still an issue, and maybe it was the competition of Indiana that just didn't really inspire them to turn things around. But I just feel like at some point, when the competition gets tough and against a Cleveland or a Toronto team that essentially tied them in the standings, maybe that's going to be the one that actually gets them to flip that switch. Toronto's been a nice team. It's a nice story. They made a couple of really good acquisitions at the trade deadline in anticipation of facing the Cavs and maybe catching them in a weak moment. But I just have a hard time picking against LeBron James against anyone in the Eastern Conference right now.
Why does Scott Brooks not get more credit for what he's done in Washington? It's kind of the same team, and he got him to play at a much higher level.
That's the thing. I mean, Randy Whitman, I was never a big fan of Whitman. I had no idea why he hung on to his job year after year. And you're right. I mean, Brooks came in and inherited basically the same team. No significant changes. Some of their free agent signings, you know, didn't do a whole lot for him, like Jan Mahinmi. I'm ecstatic for Scott Brooks because people, like you mentioned, the narratives. You know, the narrative of him in Oklahoma City was it's basically roll the ball out and let Westbrook and Durant do their thing. You know, criticized so much on late game decisions, and some of that still, you know, bears some merit. But I'm ecstatic for him that he was able to go to a situation like that and almost get him to 50 wins in one season. So he deserves a lot more credit than what he's getting.
I only hold one grudge against Brooks as a guy who follows the Thunder. Mm-hmm. I do begrudge him in the NBA Finals in 2012 playing Perkins as much as he did against the Heat and not going small throughout the game. I thought they probably would have won the series if they had gone small and stayed small.
Yeah, you know, that one of these days I'm going to go back and rewatch that series. Because I swear I've forgotten more than I remember
sure.
about it. But yeah, I mean, the visions that I have of that series, one is like Shane Battier like throwing around Kevin Durant like a rag doll.
Yeah.
And yeah, then there was the whole Perkins thing, you know, relying too much on Derek Fisher. It makes you wonder, like, if after game two of that series, going back to Miami, you know, what if Brooks would have suddenly, you know, we're going to pull Perkins, we're going to start James Harden, and try something like that.
It's the part of when Bill Simmons and these people do it, and look, it's you get clicks and ratings, and you have an opinion, and you just bully your opinion, and I get it. Some of it's an act. Some of it is an agenda. I get it.
Yep.
Harden was a great player off the bench for the Thunder, and probably would have been a great shooting guard for the Thunder, but he was really bad in the NBA Finals that year.
he was really bad. And I mentioned that trip to South Beach. You know, there's a lot of stories that have been written and not written about him having a lot of fun in South Beach during the NBA Finals. And, you know, that played a big part in not only how he played, but, you know, why the organization thought, you know, we could probably get by without him. So that was one of many things that came up out of that.
There was no one out there that thought he would become this player. And I'm not belittling him at all. He's fantastic to watch, and he's easily one of the five best players in the league. But to date, he hasn't taken a team and put them on his shoulders and carried them all that far.
Right. There was the team that went to the conference finals a couple of years back. Last year, obviously, was just a complete disappointment. So yeah, you know, we'll see if he guides a team that gets past San Antonio this season. Like you mentioned, those narratives, those will start to turn a little bit. But yeah, I mean, and right now there's a whole planet full of people right now that feel like you're better off building a team around James Harden than Russell Westbrook. So we shall see.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I buy that.
I'm not there yet either.
Look, I get the Westbrook thing, the usage, and the Thunder can't that won't work long term, obviously.
Nope.
But I don't know that, and now that it's over, and it was where I was going to kind of finish with you. Now that it's over, I don't know that people fully appreciate what Westbrook accomplished this year.
Yeah, there was so much time and energy spent in trying to discredit his accomplishments. And how I've described it in talking about it a lot, at some point during the season, I don't know if it was in training camp or if it was early in the season, it became the season of Russ. And everything kind of became engineered around, you know, making this season about Russell Westbrook. I kind of get it. I can see how that would have unfolded for a number of reasons. I mean, for the sake of the fan base, for the sake of Russell Westbrook and his long-term prospects here, you know, the reality is he did what he did with no grumbling from his teammates. You know, there was no one that was, you know, Enes Kanter and Steven Adams were not upset because they were boxing out guys so Russ could get the rebound. You know, the harmony was maintained. Did it sacrifice some player development? Sure, I'm sure it did. Is it lost forever? I don't think so. But yeah, I completely understand why the season kind of unfolded the way it did around him.
Can they find a backup point guard for him?
You would think. It has been ever since trading Reggie Jackson. And Reggie, I mean, let's face it, the last half year in Oklahoma City, he was, you know, unhappy is putting it mildly. But after that, you know, DJ Augustine kind of had a couple of moments then fell out of the rotation. Then Campaign showed some promise, fell out. Randy Foy came in and did his thing. You know, Samaj Kristen, I frankly don't think he's that good. And then, you know, whatever else they've thrown out there, they can't seem to find Russ a capable backup. So in the draft, maybe there's an opportunity there. You know, to find somebody or, you know, either through trade or free agency to come in and find someone, because I don't know, they need someone who can come in and give a reliable, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a night. And it seems like it shouldn't be that difficult, but for whatever reason, it has been the past couple of years.
I guess last thing, you, in the event that, you and I don't talk before the NBA finals roll around and they end, gun to your head, who's in it and who wins?
I mean, since July 4th last year, I've said it, we're headed towards Golden State Cleveland. And, you know, there hasn't been much, frankly, there's been nothing to change my mind about that. You know, there's been, thankfully, a lot of things to follow this season to kind of keep us distracted from the inevitable finals matchup. But, yeah, I mean, barring an injury of some sort, I feel like we're headed towards Golden State Cleveland again. But here's the thing. I'm not going to bet against LeBron James.
I'm not either.
I'm just not.
Nope.
I'm not willing to yet. If you give me LeBron James and a healthy set of teammates, I've kind of learned my lesson there. I'm going to ride that for now.
You know what, John? If he wins this year with this Cleveland team and beats that Warriors team, I don't care all the excuses about who's not fully healthy and Durant's calf or whatever. Mm-hmm. I know this is sacrilegious to say what I'm about to say, and I grew up in the age of Jordan. You have to start talking about LeBron as the greatest ever.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, even after last year's finals, you know, I've talked about how LeBron James, number one, has the biggest block in NBA history. Kyrie Irving hit the biggest shot in NBA history because, you know, this was a Cleveland team that was down 3-1, the 73-win Golden State Warriors with the only unanimous MVP, and they came back and won Game 7 on the other team's home court. So when LeBron did that, plus getting a triple-double in Game 7, you know, on top of all that, that put him way up there, and it's just so unfair to start counting rings when you start comparing greatness because every era is different. If LeBron, if he does pull it off again this season, like we just talked about, absolutely, we need to start having some really serious conversations about this stuff.
Well, listen, I really appreciate the time. You've been more than generous. It was a lot of fun for me, and I hope you enjoyed it too, and love to get you back on maybe before free agency gets kicked off and sort of get your thoughts on what might go down.
You bet, man. Anytime.
Thanks, John. Our thanks to John for his time today. We will be back later in the week at least once. Austin Barber, our political analyst with the Clearwater Group and also with Strategic Partners in Media. He will join us. We'll talk Donald Trump's first 100 days, where he goes from here. Was it a bad idea on his part to snub the correspondence dinner? We'll talk about those things and more with Austin. And then trying to work on some things for the Kentucky Derby. The draft's over now. I'm going to try to get in touch with Chris Landry, see if he'll come on from LandryFootball.com, see if he'll come on and maybe talk winners and losers of the NFL draft. What in the world were the Bears thinking, among other things. So we'll do that. And then sometime here soon, we'll get our old buddy Jeffrey Wright back on and just sort of shoot the you-know-what and have a little conversation with him on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. So until later this week, thanks for your time today. Hope you have a great week. Talk to you soon.